Phil Knight's journey to launching Nike. In 1962, Phil Knight was a 24-year-old with a bold idea. While studying at Stanford, he researched a potential business plan, importing Japanese running shoes to the U.S. to compete against established European brands. To pursue this venture, he needed to travel to Japan. Knight borrowed money from his father in Portland, Oregon, planning to make this trip part of a larger journey worldwide. Accompanied by a friend from Stanford, he set out, but Knight continued alone after a short stay in Hawaii. In Japan, he met with executives at the Onitsuka Tiger Shoe Company. Knight pitched the idea of becoming their U.S. distributor under Blue Ribbon Sports, and the executives agreed to send him samples. Afterward, he traveled through Asia, the Middle East, and Europe, even visiting Greece, where he saw the Temple of Athena Nike. From there, he returned to Portland. After Knight got back to the U.S., he worked as an accountant while waiting for Onitsuka's samples to arrive. Once they did, he sent some to Bill Bowerman, his former track coach at Oregon State University, who was known in the track community and also experimented with shoe design. Bowerman met with Knight, proposing a partnership. With help from Bowerman's lawyer friend, John Yakwa, they made it official. Knight then secured another loan from his father, asking Onitsuka for more shoes and exclusive rights to distribute Tiger shoes in the Western U.S. Knight sold the shoes at track events, relying on word of mouth and print ads to grow the brand. To fund his shipments, he also took out loans from the First National Bank of Oregon. This marked the beginning of the company that would eventually become Nike. Challenges in building a shoe business. Phil Knight received a letter from a coach stating that Onitsuka had given him exclusive rights to distribute their shoes in the United States. In response, Knight quickly flew to Japan and met with Onitsuka's founder. The founder, understanding Knight's position, agreed to grant him exclusive distribution rights for the Western United States. To mark this agreement, Knight climbed Mount Fuji, where he met a woman named Sarah and started a romantic relationship. They maintained a long-distance relationship back in the U.S., but eventually, Sarah ended it. Knight brought his sister on board as a part-time secretary and hired his track friend, Jeff Johnson, as a commissioned salesman in California. Johnson turned out to be a successful salesman, though his personality often clashed with Knight's management style. Meanwhile, the bank expressed concerns that Knight wasn't building enough equity in his business, despite sales being projected to double within the first year. At his accounting job, Knight met Delbert Hayes, an accountant who became a mentor to him. Around the same time, Knight's track coach, Bowerman, coached U.S. athletes at the 1964 Olympics. Bowerman met with Onitsuka executives there and started working with them to design running shoes for U.S. athletes. As Johnson's sales grew, Knight allowed him to open a retail store in Eugene, Oregon. Later, Johnson learned from a customer that a competitor was trying to take over his client base. In response, Knight flew to Japan to meet Kitami, a new Onitsuka liaison. To ease Kitami's concerns, Knight claimed he had offices on the East Coast, though these offices didn't exist. The early development of Blue Ribbon Sports. When Phil Knight returned to Oregon, he hired a new employee to manage the Eugene store and sent Jeff Johnson to open another store in the Boston suburbs. At the same time, coach Bill Bowerman asked Knight to hire two of his former track athletes as salespeople. One of these was Bob Woodall, who had recently been paralyzed from the waist down due to an accident. Bowerman also developed a new shoe called the Cortez in collaboration with Onitsuka, which they planned to launch at the 1968 Olympics. Knight then relocated the company's operations to an old, dilapidated warehouse. Knight soon left his accounting job to teach accounting at Portland State University, allowing him more time to focus on Blue Ribbon Sports. There, he met one of his most promising students, Penelope Parks, and hired her as a bookkeeper. The two started dating, met each other's families, and eventually decided to make their relationship official. While Penelope arranged their wedding, Knight traveled to Japan to meet with Kitami. They got married when he returned. Expansion and financial obstacles for Blue Ribbon Sports. In 1969, Knight left teaching to manage Blue Ribbon full-time. During this period, Kitami and Onitsuka's founder visited Oregon, where Knight and his wife were living on a tight budget. After Penelope became pregnant, they bought a house, and Knight expanded Blue Ribbon's office space, assigning responsibilities to employees according to their strengths. Their first child, a healthy boy, was born soon after. Knight traveled back to Japan to renegotiate Blue Ribbon's contract with Onitsuka, though he was concerned when they would only agree to a 3-year renewal. With Onitsuka's shipments often arriving late despite rising demand, Blue Ribbon faced issues with its bank, which refused to extend more credit unless the company could show higher cash reserves. To stay afloat, Knight delayed a shipment, and Woodall and his parents offered him a loan of $8,000 to help keep the business going. The beginning of Nike, a turn of events. Knight learned that Onitsuka was searching for a new distributor, so he invited Kitami to visit Blue Ribbon, hoping to impress him and prevent Onitsuka from switching partners. During the visit, Knight introduced Kitami to his bankers, hoping they could help improve Blue Ribbon's credit. However, Kitami was disrespectful to the bankers. Afterward, when they returned to the Blue Ribbon office, Knight secretly took papers from Kitami's briefcase and discovered that Kitami was planning to meet with other potential U.S. distributors. After Kitami's visit concluded with a party at Bowerman's home, he left for the rest of his trip. Upon returning, Kitami proposed buying Blue Ribbon, but Knight didn't respond right away. Soon after, First National Bank of Oregon ended its relationship with Blue Ribbon. In response, Knight found new bankers and secured a line of credit at the Bank of California, with backing from a Japanese trading company, Nisho Iwai. Blue Ribbon needed a new brand name to make its shoes. Knight began producing shoes under the Nike brand, using the famous swoosh logo, first in Mexico and then in Japan, with Nisho Iwai's financial backing. Thanks to connections at Nisho Iwai, Knight met a shoe production expert who was so passionate about shoes that Knight called him a shoe dog, a term used by shoe enthusiasts. Knight also raised more money by selling convertible debentures, a type of loan that can be converted into stock in a company. Meanwhile, Bowerman was working on a new type of running shoe sole, inspired by the shape of a waffle. At the Chicago National Sporting Goods Association show, Blue Ribbon unveiled Nike shoes, and they were met with a positive response. However, when Onitsuka discovered that Blue Ribbon was already selling Nike shoes in their retail stores, Kitami ended the contract between Onitsuka and Blue Ribbon and issued a bill for the delivered shoes. Nike's struggles and growth. In 1972, Blue Ribbon promoted Nikes to athletes at the track and field trials for the Olympics, planning to continue at the Munich Olympics, where Bill Bowerman was the track coach. However, that year, a terrorist attack kidnapped and killed Israeli athletes, which deeply affected Bowerman and led him to retire from coaching. Meanwhile, Phil Knight started focusing on signing young, unconventional athletes to promote the Nike brand. When the Oregon Ducks football team began wearing Nike's waffle shoes, they won a key game 30-3. Nike gained a major boost with the endorsement of Stephen Prefontaine, a talented young runner, which helped distract him from his disappointing performance at the Olympics. At the same time, Knight moved Woodall and Johnson to different roles to better suit their skills. In another development, Onitsuka sued Blue Ribbon in Japan, prompting Blue Ribbon to file a countersuit in the United States. Knight hired his cousin, Doug Hauser, to handle the case, bringing Rob Strasser onto the legal team. During this time, Knight's wife had another son. Blue Ribbon's turning point. The case in the U.S. was decided first, with the judge ruling in favor of Blue Ribbon for trademark violation. Onitsuka then offered $400,000 to settle the case. Knight brought Strasser on board as Blue Ribbon's in-house counsel. Due to fluctuating yen values, Knight decided to move factory operations to Puerto Rico and New Hampshire, with Johnson taking charge. However, Knight didn't inform Nisho Iwai or its credit manager, Tadayuki Ito, about the new factory, wanting to stay on top of the company's financial obligations. In 1975, to meet a $1 million payment to Nisho, Blue Ribbon had to empty all its bank accounts, including the one used to pay factory workers, leading to bounced checks. Johnson covered the payments with a loan from a local business, but this caused the Bank of California to sever its relationship with Blue Ribbon and report potential fraud to the FBI. Additional payments to creditors also failed. Ito and another representative from Nisho came to Oregon to audit Blue Ribbon and discovered the secret New Hampshire factory, but still offered to help Blue Ribbon get through its financial troubles. The company subsequently relocated its funds to First State Bank of Oregon. Nike's evolution. In 1975, Prefontaine tragically died in a car accident, deeply affecting both the running community and the entire Nike team. Around the same time, Bowerman sold most of his share in Blue Ribbon to Knight, who then renamed the company Nike and shifted more of its manufacturing from Japan to Taiwan. By the 1976 Olympic trials, Nike was beginning to compete with the two major shoe brands of that era, Adidas and Puma. In 1977, an aerospace engineer proposed a new idea for shoes with air pockets in the soles. Meanwhile, Knight focused on securing more sponsorship deals with college sports teams, and Nike shoes started appearing in popular culture. However, Nike faced legal challenges when its competitors worked together to have the U.S. Customs Service bill Nike $25 million for alleged pricing violations. Strasser led Nike's defense, enlisting a friend who dug into the legal details of the American selling price rule. Legal battles, public offering, and personal losses. Knight went to Washington to argue against the bill but made no progress. He then lobbied senators and, at the same time, began exploring selling shoes in China. After Nike challenged the American selling price violation and filed an antitrust lawsuit, the government opened settlement talks. Nike ultimately paid $9 million to settle. In December 1980, Knight and other executives took Nike public but ensured they kept control by creating two types of stocks, one for the public and one for themselves. As a result, most of the executives became millionaires, and Knight's shares were worth $178 million. By 2007, Nike had become a leading sportswear brand, with endorsement deals with some of the biggest athletes. However, Knight faced personal losses, including the deaths of his son in a diving accident, Bowerman from old age, and Strasser from a heart attack. Throughout Nike's growth and leadership changes, Knight worked hard to maintain the company's culture and history while responding to scandals about the factories where Nike shoes were made. That year, Knight decided to write a book about Nike's early days. Key points. 1. Start small, take risks, and seek partnerships to grow your business. 2. Be prepared to face financial challenges and consider loans or outside help when needed. 3. Innovate and create unique products that stand out in a crowded market. 4. Leverage endorsements and partnerships to build brand recognition and trust. 5. Overcome legal and financial hurdles by staying determined and adaptable. 6. Keep your vision strong and focus on long-term success, even through tough times. 7. Take control of your business's future by securing ownership and making smart financial decisions.